Thank you to Red Eye, the Photography Network, for partnering with us to produce Season 3 of the Photo Ethics Podcast. Red Eye is a not-for-profit organization with a strong ethical focus, offering support and opportunities to help you advance your photography and your career. Find out more at redeye.org.uk. Welcome to Season 3 of the Photo Ethics Podcast. I'm your host, Savannah Dodd, and I'm the founder of the Photography Ethics Center. Each week, I'll be talking with an accomplished photographer about the ethics of their practice. Today, in episode number 8, we'll be talking with Seba Chowdhury about diversity and inclusion. Seba Chowdhury is a freelance creative producer and curator. She's experienced in working at international festivals, projects, and events. She's co-founder and co-director of Reframed, a photographic visual arts network based in the Midlands, supporting the community and artists who are Black, Asian, and from other ethnic minorities. She's currently project coordinator of Picturing England's High Streets, a historic England-funded project managed by PhotoWorks, and creative producer on Peer-to-Peer UKHK, a digital exchange program managed by the OpenEye Gallery and the University of Salford. Seba is also curator for AIS Open 2022, editor for the photoexhibitionarchive.com, a steering group member for Format Festival, and board member at the Red Eye Photography Network. Could we start with you telling us a little bit about the work that you do?
So I work as a freelance creative producer. So I work on various different projects around the UK and abroad, working with photography organisations, some of the leading UK photo organisations, and also I'm a freelance curator as well.
That's really interesting because I don't think we've had a curator on the podcast yet. So I'm really curious to know about the ethics of curation. What kinds of ethical things come into your curatorial practice?
There are so many. One thing that I really kind of focus on is ethnic diversity in the arts and photography. And being a South Asian woman myself, there aren't that many South Asian curators out there, and especially Pakistani curators in the UK, there are very few. And when I'm curating, I'm looking at the diversity of the artists I work with and where I'm showing this work, and making sure that photographers that I'm working with, the artists that I'm working with, are treated in a very kind of fair way. Yeah, so you've not had a curator on here so far, and it's nice to kind of be on here. And listening to photographers in the past, they obviously talk about ethics in their practice and how they photograph, and obviously very important, but also for curators, it's very important to think about how they work with photographers and ensuring that there is diversity, not just ethnic diversity, but across the board. So whenever I'm working with artists, I make sure that I look at the other protected characteristics as well to make sure that I am trying to be as inclusive as I can, because it's very important to kind of sometimes forget that and overlook it. But because I'm a woman of colour myself, it's something that's always in the back of my mind and quite often the forefront of my mind. Curating is a very exciting part of my practice, as well as producing, but I do look at diversity in everything that I do.
And I guess, you know, you've worked across quite a wide variety of arts organizations, mostly in the UK, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I guess how different organizations construct policies around inclusion and things. I'm sure you've seen the whole gamut of that. What has been your experience in terms of your ability to make ethical decisions about your own practice as a curator within an organizational setting?
First, I just want to say I do more producing than I do curating. So my curating is not like it's not the main thing I do at the moment. But when I work with organizations, I always look at their values and their ethics and their practice. And for example, how much do they pay photographers? How much do they pay white photographers compared to how much they pay photographers of color? Obviously, since BLM, a lot of things are changing. Organizations are changing the way they do things. But I know some organizations, they commission photographers who are white and they get really big commissions. And then they're also giving out commissions to photographers of color, but then their commissions are not so big. So if you look at the organizations and look at how they treat their artists and how they pay their artists, and I look at those different kinds of things to see whether or not I want to work in an organization. And PhotoWorks, for example, are one of the organizations that I work with, and they pay for Instagram takeovers, for example, they pay speakers fees, and this is all listed. It's very transparent on the website. And I think that it's very important to do that. And when I go and work in an organization, or even when I get asked to be in a jury for something, I always check who the other jury members are and whether I'm a tested token person of color. Or, and also getting paid for me is important. I'm a freelancer, so I can't give up my time for a day or 2 days or 3 days, you know, for nothing. So I ensure that I am getting paid. And sometimes I don't get offered payment and I have to ask for it. And the organization will come back and say, oh, yes, we can pay you, or we can pay your travel, we can pay your accommodation for something or other. But I really question what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And why I'm working with a certain organization. And in the UK and abroad as well, I've worked with really great organizations, and they all do have great values. But of course, we have to always question those, and we have to make sure that they are being held accountable. And if they have these statements for BLM, for example, are they following those things, and are they making sure that they are doing what they said they will do? It's very important, I think, and I do call out organizations occasionally, because I do think it's really important, and representation matters. And if they have these statements and then they don't actually follow through, then we're not really making any real change. There's no impact.
Absolutely. So maybe my question should have been better put, you know, rather than dealing with those ethical considerations after you're already working with an organization, you're sort of just making sure you want to work with the organization, which makes a lot of sense. And you talked a little bit about pay there, and I know that that's been a big thing that people have talked about on the podcast in previous episodes. And I know it's something, you know, that idea of transparency with pay that you brought up, I think, is such an important thing. Myself as well, you know, I've had emails asking me to do work and there's no mention of payment. And it puts you in a difficult position as a freelancer when the onus is on you to then go and ask, am I getting paid for this? So how do you sort of see the ethics of that? And how do you approach that also when you're working with organizations?
I ask them, I say, well, thank you for this opportunity. Who else is on the board or whatever it is, and how much is the fee? And I don't always get paid my daily rate, but if I'm really interested in a job and I feel like it's a, you know, great opportunity for me, and I go for a slight cut, which is understandable, and it's still a good freelance wage, but it's not my, you know, daily rate. But to be transparent, my daily rate is £200 or £250, but often my jobs pay £150 a day, which is okay. And sometimes they pay more, which is great. It's interesting, because if you say this is what I charge and they have like a budget that's much higher, then it's also a bit tricky as well. But when I look at ethics and practice, I don't just look at what I do. I look at photographers, and I do a lot of mentoring, so I support a lot of artists in their practice. And Selfridges in Birmingham, they have this wrap around the building. They're having some work done, and they commission an artist, Osman Yusuf Sardan. He's a great Birmingham-born British artist. It's great that they asked him to make this work, and it's about migration. And then they also showed the work of a few other artists within Selfridges. This was in partnership with Icon Gallery, and a couple of the artists, I know them, and one of them, Mariam Wahid, she didn't get paid for her work to be shown at Selfridges. And I just find that really, really bad. It's like, this is an artist that's emerging for sure. She's a brilliant artist. She's got really great work. She had an exhibition at the MAC in Birmingham Midlands Arts Centre this year. And for her not to get paid, even if it's a nominal fee, £200, £300, £400, I think that's just really, really terrible. And I feel like if they were photographers who were white and male and middle-aged, they would have been paid. And they probably wouldn't even be in a discussion. They would have said, okay, we want you to do this. This is how much it is. And because she's a woman, she's a young woman of color, she's just not getting paid. Neither is the other person. And, you know, it's not like it's a grassroots project. This is Selfridges, an Icon Gallery. Icon is, you know, the funded organization, one of the leading galleries in Birmingham. I just find it really terrible, distasteful that they can't muster up a bit of money for these artists who are freelance artists that, you know, this is their job, this is what they live on. And sure, they don't need exposure, and it's great for them to show they're working in Selfridges, but they should be paid for that.
I feel like that all points to why mentorship is so important as well, because especially when you're maybe a little bit earlier in your career, it's really hard to know what your work is worth and what to charge and how to approach those conversations. So I can imagine, is there a bit of an ethical imperative to do mentorship for you?
Definitely. I love mentoring people, and I've mentored a lot of photographers in my career, and that's something I've done even before I realized it was mentoring, just supporting people and helping them. But now it's something that I do a bit more consciously. I do the Red Eye Graduate Mentoring Scheme and mentor on there. And I mentored a really great artist last year, and we're still in touch. And I had a session with her last month about something or other. And if people approach me and say they'd like me to mentor them, then I just do it. And I don't charge for that normally. I do get paid through Red Eye for that. It's not a huge amount, but they do pay. But I do often mentor people. And I think knowing things like how much you should charge and how much they shouldn't charge and what the do's and the don'ts are in the industry is really important. So it is indeed one of the reasons that I do mentor. And I don't just mentor people of color, by the way. I mentor women and men as well. And I have a huge love for photography and all artists. And I support lots of different people and different backgrounds. But of course, being a woman of color, I am more drawn to supporting women and women of color, people of color, because I know that perhaps been through difficulties in their lifetime through work, and it's challenging, and for whatever reasons they may not have had the same opportunities as their peers. So yeah, I mentor whenever I can, and I support with things like pay. I think it's very important. I think often photographers don't really know their worth, and they don't realize their worth until perhaps a while later. Even myself, when I was working, I didn't really realize how much I had learned and how important the work was that I was doing, and I didn't really know my worth until I left kind of a job, and then I realized, oh yeah, actually I do have a lot of skills. I can succeed as a freelancer. People do need me to do these things, and I can do those things. And I started charging, you know, fees that I thought basically that, you know, that I deserve.
Absolutely. I think it's a bit of that imposter syndrome thing, isn't it? That finally getting to that point of recognizing that you do maybe have a skill that other people might not have, or other people might not have the time or capacity to take on the things that you're doing. And, you know, we're talking a lot about pay. And I think another issue that you've brought up before has been the cost of application fees and exhibition and competitions and things like that. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I work at Format Festival, and we have a portfolio review, and it charges, you know, and I think that portfolio reviews are really essential for photographers and their practice. It helps with getting their work out there and getting advice. But there is a cost involved, and the cost is because we pay the reviewers for their time, or if it's a real life festival, we pay for the accommodation, the travel, and then we use the income from the reviews to pay towards those things. It's not a moneymaker. Format do subsidize the reviews, and now that it's been online for the last few years, we made the reviews a lot cheaper, just so that we can make it more affordable for photographers. And it's a lot easier for photographers because they don't have to travel, they don't have to pay for accommodation, and they don't have to leave their kids, for example, at home. And it's just a lot more accessible, which is really brilliant. So we can make it cheaper, but it's still not affordable for some people who are struggling. So we have introduced bursaries. I introduced bursaries last year, 10 bursaries for artists from underrepresented communities. So we have 10 bursaries for underrepresented artists. And this year we also asked the community, if anybody can afford to pay for reviews, please let us know. And we have street level photo works in Glasgow, and Stills Gallery in Edinburgh came forward, and they both sponsored also 10 bursaries for Scottish artists because they have less opportunities. And I really kind of want to make reviews more accessible to everyone. And I want, you know, I want to eventually make them, you know, free at Format if we can. Format does not have a huge budget like everyone thinks that Format's huge, but it's managed by two people who basically run it all and in a very little budget. And it's the same for the open call for Format. The money comes in and then that goes back out to the photographers that get exhibited. And I know Format and myself, you know, people, I would love for these opportunities to be free. And I know there are other organizations that have a more commercial approach. Lens Culture, for example, I mean, they're a business model and there's a lot of competition all the time, and they charge. But that's about making money, which I don't really agree with. And also another thing, when I'm asked to be in the jury for something, I ask if I can give certain number of places out for free for people, artists who cannot afford it. And I've done that before at Format as well. I've paid for people's places to apply for the open call, for example, at Format. And I think if more organizations can do that, they can support artists with their training fees, and the people, individuals can benefit, and so can the organizations still getting some income, but they're, you know, from people who can afford it, organizations who can afford it.
Absolutely. It's kind of like a social enterprise model, I guess. You know, the people who can pay, pay, and help to subsidize the places for the people who aren't in a position to be able to afford that at the time. And I think that that makes a lot of sense. You know, we operate a social enterprise model at the Photography Ethics Center as well. So you've talked a little bit about ethics in the various roles that you've taken in terms of curating and working with different arts organizations. You mentioned production there as well, and I was wondering if you could talk about, or if there's a different ethical considerations that come into play when you are producing work versus when you're taking on other roles, or if it's sort of the same considerations just played out a little bit differently.
It really depends on the project that I'm working on. Every project is different. But when I'm working with an organization, like I said before, that makes sure that the organization is an ethical organization, they have good values. But I also look at the photographers, for example, that they work with, like I've also mentioned. I have worked on projects before where there have been all white photographers, and I have challenged this or tried to work out why that is the reason. Like if it's an application, for example, why are only white photographers applying for this? And what can we do to make it different, make changes, make it so that other photographers, they have the support to write a good application. And people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, for example, they may not have the same skills as somebody else to write, you know, a good application and as good an application. And they may not have the time. They may have, you know, be juggling several jobs. And when I work with organizations in different projects, I make sure that it's kind of considered when looking at applications, when taking on photographers and supporting them. They may not have the same background. I was in the jury last year for something, and myself and another of the jury members really liked one of the artist's works, but it was overly photoshopped, and it was from a country in South Asia. And I mean, he made really great work, but we knew that we had to consider the fact that he didn't have the same training as some of the other photographers may have had, a lot of photographers will have had. And just because the images are slightly over-contrasted, the story was still very important. And it's about giving that person the chance. I think that's really important when you're reviewing applications and things, is giving people a chance and working out why they've done what they have done. And I think those considerations are really important, because representation does matter. And if you just accept all the best applications, it'll probably be from people who have been educated very well and, you know, white probably. So you have to take those considerations on board. And I do it a lot more in the last couple of years. I mean, I haven't always done it in my life, but I see things more and more, and I challenge things a lot more now than I used to. So I do call people out. And if I'm working somewhere, if you have a call out for something and we don't specify that we're looking for people from underrepresented backgrounds, and I flag that up because I think it's really important to state that. For me, if I'm applying for something, it doesn't say that. I don't like that. This organization, for example, they may have a BLM statement, but then they don't actually put that on their application. And especially if it's to do with that community, then they should encourage applications from that community. And I know actually, and I know quite a few, it's going off base a little bit here, but I know quite a few photographers, and I've spoken to people who are my friends, white photographers, who have recently said that they believe that, you know, there's so much support for artists, photographers of color, that they feel sidelined and they feel like they haven't had the opportunities. They're not getting the opportunities now, which is really, really not true. And, you know, it came from a white man who is a friend of mine. And I try to change his thinking a little bit and try and challenge that, because I think it's really important to have his conversations and challenge them. But he was saying that he has spoken to people, white men, who feel like, you know, they're not going to get any opportunities because, and it's like, well, you know, you've had like hundreds of years, there's still no equality. Gender equality is better than it used to be, but it's still not great. And that's why Photo Ethics Podcast is really important, because you talk about this and you challenge this. And that's why we all should challenge what we're doing. And your statement of ethics, for example, is really important. I think, I feel like it's really important for every single person, organization, to have a statement of ethics. And why has this not been done before, right? Because we should talk about these things, and we should have these statements and make ourselves accountable, and, you know, hold ourselves accountable and talk about these things. And
I think it's really interesting, the thing that you said about consideration for people's backgrounds when you're assessing applications. Something that I've really advocated for is consideration for, you know, the ethics of how images or a story was created. And I think it's sort of things like that that go beyond just the aesthetics of an image that we might assess things on. I think those things are really crucial to thinking about how work is made and who's producing it. And so I really appreciated that. The other thing that I think really struck me about what you were saying was the importance of saying explicitly that you're looking for applications from underrepresented communities. What is that thing that they always say that women will only apply for a job if they meet 80% of it, and men will apply if they meet 40% of it? You know, it's things like that, that people sometimes do need that extra reassurance that their application will be considered and is wanted. And I think that that's a really good point, that it's not an empty, well, it shouldn't be an empty thing to say. You know, there's value in saying it. It's not just filler. And also just, I think, you know, I've heard that as well, you know, from people saying, oh, you know, there's no opportunities for white male photographers anymore. And I wonder if you could expand on that a little bit more, not only how you respond to that, but why does it matter, you know, representation? Like, I think many people listening to this podcast will agree that representation is important. But I wonder, could you articulate what is it that makes representation so important to photography?
That's a great question, Savannah. Representation is very important. If you look at the successful documentary photographers in the UK today, there is a lot of white names in the list, you know, white male photographers who are older. And I mean, they're really brilliant. Some of them I'm very close to. I love them. I did a fundraiser a couple of years ago, and I worked in this print sale. It was a really brilliant print sale. I joined the project, and there were about 30, 35 photographers in the list. And most of them were white, I'll be honest. And the person I was working with, she's really brilliant. She's great. And she was working with somebody else. And they basically looked at all the people they knew and they listed the photographers and they knew, and then they put them in there. And they're mostly, you know, really big names who I don't really need to mention, you know. And then I kind of came, I said, oh, well, there's like not many people of color in here. And there's gender diversity. And the people really look at gender diversity. I think it's really on their minds. But then ethnic diversity, there was very little. I mean, there was one photographer of color. And then, you know, my colleague, she was really shocked that she had not thought about it, not that I'd said it. And she kind of like, you're right, Seb, let's change this. Let's, you know, do something. And so I added like lots of photographers work, like our Peter Shaw, whose image I have bought, Miriam Wahid, and lots of other people. And the thing is, if these artists, if their work is not included in things like this, how will their work get seen? How will they get, well, I won't say successful, because there's lots of different ways to measure success, but people won't want to buy their work if they don't know who they are. I mean, I buy work that I love, not necessarily work by big names. I look at the photographers and their work that I love, but if we don't have people of color and people who are from with other particular characteristics, and how will representation matters, basically. If we don't have those people in the lists and the things, doing the things, then we're not representing everybody. We're representing a small few. And then those photographers who are emerging and they're of color. I talk about color, especially because I'm a woman of color, right? And I really am talking about all underrepresented identities and communities. But if we don't represent those artists, then how will we achieve equality? You know, how will there be more inclusion? We have to include these photographers. We have to show their work. We have to give them commissions, and we have to support them. Because if I asked you who are the five biggest black photographers in the UK, or, you know, if I asked anyone, what will they say? Because who is there in the UK that's, and then if you just ask someone to name five white photographers, it'll be very easy. And also just, you know, we're kind of taught in this way, and we just go straight for the, even myself, I'm guilty of doing it. I'm by no means perfect. I'm trying to change and evolve and, you know, remind myself that I need to be better every day. And if you ask me, you know, which photographers, and I will mention, like, you know, white photographers, because they're the ones that are kind of, we see all the time. And if we're not seeing artists, photographers of color, and this also goes for all art fields, writers, and other writers, designers, we need more diversity everywhere. And until it's equal, then we really do need to keep shaking things up and mentioning it and talking about it. And that's why I think, you know, representation really does matter.
And I guess it's also a matter of having people of color in organizations, right, who are also making decisions, you know, structurally within photography organizations.
Yes, that's so, so important, Savannah. Honestly, I talk about this often, and I think that there needs to be more color in people, in teams, people working, making decisions. And I actually really like something that Justin Carey said on your podcast. He said, look at who's in the room. And that really kind of stuck with me. And he's absolutely right. And I'm in a few boards. And I think if you need to have people of color on boards of organizations, but you also need to have them in leadership roles. And you cannot just have people of color in entry levels. You can, but you can't just have entry-level roles. There has to be representation in all levels of organization, because otherwise there will be no change. And you can't just have one person either. You need to have more people. You need to have, it's not like, okay, well, we've got one brown person here, it's just enough. You need to keep going further. If an organization approached me and they were an all-white organization, and I have felt conflicted about this in the past, would I work for them? Would I do something for them? Or would I just kind of leave it because they're all white? But if I leave, then I can't make the changes that I want to make. So if I was asked to join a board that it is primarily white and the company is completely white, which I potentially might do, you know, soon, then I would join, but I'd want to make changes. I mean, I'm on the board of Red Eye. Red Eye is a great organization. It's not perfect. It's an all white team. It's a very small team. But the thing is, we're trying to change that. And by being on the board, I'm trying to change the things that we do and the things that I advocate for. And yeah, so it's, I think it's really important to have people of color, other petty characteristics on boards and in organizations and leaders of organizations. It really needs to kind of be challenged, and it can't just be tokenistic. It needs to be people who actually can make decisions.
Absolutely, not just a box ticking exercise, like you said. And kind of going off piste a little bit, but personally, I feel that it's really important as well that it's not left to people of color to point that out to boards. You know, I've been involved in a few organizations and I've tried to be quite pushy, politely pushy about that. And I think it's important that white people do that and recognize that and play a role in that. I don't know if that resonates.
Definitely. I think that we need allies, basically. We need support, and it can't just be something that, you know, black people do or brown people do. It needs to be everybody. Everybody needs to come together and support one another and push this agenda for more diversity. And I know plenty of people who are, you know, white, who are my allies, and they help me and support me. And when I call someone out for something or an organization out for something, then I know they will support me because they know what is right and what is wrong. And I don't believe in calling out individuals, because I think that can be quite damaging to a person and their mental health, because you don't really know what goes in, and especially if it's a big organization or even if it's small, whatever it is. I think it's, you know, important to challenge people, but also to do it in a way that does not affect their mental health. And you have to be really mindful of the way that you approach things like this. And also, if you have people, white allies, for example, then that really helps. But we do need to challenge this ingrained racism that does exist, that people don't really talk about, or it is there. And I've experienced plenty of, you know, microaggressions in the past in the photo community and other communities, and the things that I don't really appreciate, but people may not realize they're even doing them. But then that needs to change. And then if you're white, for example, and you call out something, then that will maybe have, that'll maybe go further than if I had say something. Because then, and also men need to be also kind of really supportive, because, you know, if women say anything, that they get accused of being aggressive or don't want to work with them because she's, you know, she's
difficult.
Exactly, that's the right word, difficult. Yeah, and men do it, it's like, oh yeah, it's just, no one even, you know, bats an eyelid. So yeah, you need more people talking about these things and supporting one another. That's how we can only really make change, right?
Yeah. And I also do really appreciate the thing that you said, that you don't call out individuals, because I tend to really agree with you on that, because I feel, I mean, broadly speaking, because it's systemic issues, you know, it's not an issue of just one person. These are big issues that are across organizations, across the industry. Yes, there are people who are potentially bad actors. And of course, there are things that are just too egregious not to call out. But I think broadly speaking, it's more effective as well to try to tackle things on an industry level. Does that sort of get at what you were saying, or am I not articulating that well?
No, that's perfect. That's exactly what I meant. I mean, recently in the last, you know, few months, years, there have been organizations that have been targeted for certain reasons, and that's okay. But when you call out individuals within those organizations for whatever reason, it's just, I think it's really damaging. And I've seen that. I've seen it damage people, and it's not great. I mean, there are individuals who are curators or whoever, Well, I've had run-ins with the past who I won't work with again because of the way that they behave, especially when it's not one-off, it's something that, you know, keeps occurring. And they don't realize that they're doing what they're doing, and I don't really like to point it out to them because, you know, I'm not rude, I suppose, but I could point it out. I suppose it really depends what you're kind of challenging and how you're challenging it, but if I know somebody has been rude to people in the past, or if they've done things I don't agree with, I don't, you know, appreciate their values, then I won't work with them. I'll make that decision. For example, if an individual has emailed a few times about working on something or other, and I don't like the way that they work and they practice the things that they do, so I just kind of say no. I don't really go into it, but I just don't work with individuals, organizations I don't want to work with. If I feel like they are completely doing things in a tokenistic way, if they're working for their own agenda and they're ticking off boxes here and there, but they don't actually believe in change, then I won't really work with them.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. You were talking there about the importance of representation, and I guess that really relates as well to the organization that I believe you've co-founded, Reframed. Is that correct?
So yes, I'm a co-founder and co-director of Reframed, along with Anand Chabra, Andrew Jackson, and Jagdish Patel. And Reframed was created for the reason of everything that we're talking about today. And it's a network, a photography-based visual arts network in the UK for Black, Asian, other people of colour, to support artists in creating work, mentoring artists through workshops and bursaries. And I'm also working with the community to tell their stories. So we think it's very important, as we're all people of colour, and we've all kind of been through our challenges in our careers, and we kind of want to make things easier for people. Like, for example, if somebody wanted to enter a competition or something and they didn't know how to fill out the application, we would support that. And I think it's very important to have an organization that does support artists and emerging artists from whatever age, and even established artists who are struggling, because they still go through these struggles. It takes a lot longer for people of color to get to where they want to be. I've worked in the photography world for 15 years now, and it's taken me more than that, actually. And it's taken me a while to get to where I am, where people are approaching me and asking me to do various works and projects, which I really enjoy, but I feel like it's taken me a lot longer than it should have. And I didn't really have any support early on in my career, and especially when I was in education and I dropped out of university, I didn't enjoy that experience. And yeah, so Reframed is a really important organization, and things haven't really changed in the 15 years I was at university. So it's really important for an organization like Reframed to be helping, supporting photographers and artists in the UK.
So we've talked a little bit about different organizations, but what other institutions play a role in increasing representation across the industry and how representation is addressed?
I think one main thing that I've talked about in the past with colleagues and friends, and also we talk about this at Reframed, is the lack of diversity at educational institutions. If you look at the universities around the UK, there are so many photography courses, but how many of the teaching staff are of colour? And there's very few run by people of colour. There are so many without people of colour on teaching staff, which is really crazy. And if you look at all the full-time roles at universities, they're mostly by white men, and there's not enough diversity, gender diversity either. And I think that's something that really needs to change, because if you're a student and you're studying, and if you're a South Asian person and you want to talk about your South Asian history, and then you can't really go to your lecturer because they don't really understand. And nothing has changed in the 15 years that I was at university. There are still very few people teaching my education institutions, and that does really need to change. This conversation needs to be had, and there needs to be more diversity, definitely, across education and all platforms, really.
That makes so much sense, because as well, I guess, if they're also teaching students in a potentially very gazy way, you know, that sort of the white male gaze trickles down through educational institutions, doesn't it?
Definitely, absolutely does. And my colleagues at Reframed are really kind of passionate about changing this. So yeah, watch this space. We'll do something exciting about that soon, I'm sure. But it's definitely something that I've talked about and want to talk about, and something that more people should be talking about. And why aren't lecturers, why aren't heads of universities making these changes? Maybe if they don't have as many students of colour, why is that? Is it because it's not reflected in the teaching staff? Quite possibly, right?
Lastly, could you tell me, what does photography ethics mean to you?
To me, it's about being fair and holding myself accountable for the decisions that I make, which includes who I work with and why I work with them, and also holding others accountable.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Photo Ethics Podcast. The aim of this podcast is to share new insights about photography ethics with others. So if you heard something you liked, please share this podcast with someone who would appreciate it. The links to all things mentioned in this episode are available in the show notes at www.photoethics.org. Join me next week when we hear from Anthony Lavera on collaborative representation. In each episode of the podcast, we ask our guests, what does photography ethics mean to you? This is a question that everyone in the photography industry should be able to answer. That's why the Photography Ethics Center is asking you, our listeners, to commit to writing and publishing your own statement of ethics. Visit www.photoethics.org/ethics to learn more and to make the pledge committing to ethical transparency, accountability, and awareness. That's www.photoethics.org/ethics. This podcast was edited and digitally produced by Ellie Gascoigne.